New York City. It's the Gary Moore Show. Your host, Gary Noll.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Noll, broadcasting and video streaming live from our studios, New York City. I'd like to welcome you. Today, we're going to find out about how eating mushrooms can lower your risk of prostate cancer from Takahoku University in Japan, published in the International Journal of Cancer. We have about 12 other studies we're going to be sharing, and every day we scan the entire world literature, finding high-quality studies from respected institutions that are published in peer-reviewed journals where we can actually extend the time in our life and the quality of our health. Then we're going to have two commentaries. The first is an original investigative report on Wikipedia. And this deals with how they have used their power and position to malign a legitimate mainstream journalist, Cheryl Atkinson. We're going to her defense. She's not even aware of this. We didn't even interview her. We simply went through all the work that she was doing on a particular subject, found that everything being said about her on Wikipedia was wrong. And therefore, we have this. It's posted on our website, prn.fm. Then a special commentary, American Gulag. Are prisoners getting more oppressed by the day? By John Whitehead, constitutional lawyer, one of the best in America. He's right probably in the top five, and certainly in the top two with Danny Sheehan and speaking out on a regular basis. I also have my own commentary on the loss of our freedoms, one freedom at a time, and what it means. So we'll be having those. Then I'm setting aside a substantial amount of time for our guest today, Abby Martin. I watched a documentary that she produced last evening, and it was extremely troubling. You can't watch it without having strong afterthoughts about how could this happen? Why is the world not paying attention? But she had the courage to do it. She is also maligned on Wikipedia, and for all the wrong reasons. But this documentary, I'll bet anything it's not going to be seen anywhere. And that's unfortunate because it deserves to be seen everywhere. So at least this audience will know about it, because I guarantee you, no network's going to touch this. PBS won't touch it. But we will. So that's where we're starting our program today. Also, I'll tell you about two lectures coming up, one on Saturday and this week, and then one the following Saturday at noon. They're both very important, and those of you who care about the truth behind 9/11, brand new information. I was reading from the director of this, new information, brand new information no one's aware of. But that'll be shared at this forum on Saturday. And then the following week, it's going to be on new information on vaccines. And I'm going to be presenting at the second one, which is a week from Saturday, up in Harlem, and I'll give you the details later, a brand new article that I've written. And it deals with the truth behind their statements, pro-vaccine statements, that we need vaccines because, after all, they eradicated smallpox. No, they didn't. The measles, no, they didn't. Polio actually changed the definition of polio, flaccid paralysis, didn't cure it at all. So the truth, fully documented, with proper references, I'm going to be handing out to all the attendants, and we'll be posting it as well. But we start always with the latest on health and healing. And this is a new study published in the International Journal of Cancer, and it found an inverse relationship between mushroom consumption and the development of prostate cancer. Now, this is mainly for middle-aged and older people because that's when you begin to become more susceptible to prostate cancer. 36,000 men, ages 40 to 79, participated in this cohort study, And they followed him for 13 years. And they found that those who developed the least prostate cancer consumed the most mushrooms. The smallest amount of mushrooms you could consume was once a week. But I believe people should be consuming mushrooms like shiitake mushrooms, reishi mushrooms, white bottom mushrooms on a daily basis. They're extremely powerful for preventing all kinds of cancer, not just prostate cancer. Also from Oxford University comes a study about vegetarian and vegan diet and pescetarian diets. They're linked with a lower risk of coronary heart disease. So when we talk about a vegan diet, we're talking about a diet that lowers your risk of heart attack and stroke. And versus the common diet that includes meat and sugar that increases your risk of stroke. This was published in today's British Medical Journal. And so I think it's, you know, I think it's important that we take a very careful look at our diets and understand that what we eat is directly going to impact our blood pressure, our cholesterol levels, our hormone levels. And we want to make sure if we're eating a good, healthy vegan diet, also supplement. As good as a vegan diet is, as far as fibers and grains and amino acids, you're not getting the amount of vitamins and minerals you need, especially B12. Supplement with that. And also supplement with vitamin C and vitamin E, because that can reduce the risk of a stroke. And that's important. So once again, healthy diet. There were 48,000 people in this study, made a big difference. Also from Wenho Medical University in China, the neuroprotective properties of rhodiola, rosea, R-H-O-D-I-O-L-A, rosea, R-O-S-E-A. It's very common. You can buy it in any health food store. But researchers from China investigated the potential neuroprotective, meaning your neurological system, your brain, your spinal column, your nerves, and found that a chemical found in the plant, rhodiola, was very powerful in helping turn off inflammation. This was published in the peer-reviewed Journal of Chinese Medicine. And what they found is the microglia, that's M-I-C-R-O, microglial, G-L-I-A-L, activation leads to increased production of pro-inflammatory enzymes and cytokines. Cyto, C-Y-T-O, kinds, K-I-N-E-S. Those are bad pro-inflammatory. You don't want those. You want to suppress those. And all the more cytokines you have in your brain, the more neurodegeneration and disease you're going to see. Multiple sclerosis, Parkinson's, ALS, and dementia. Now, there are only a few drugs that target the microglial activation, but this chemical used in traditional Chinese medicine, and it is very powerful, turning off inflammation in your brain. That's good, and you get it in that single plant. So, one more piece to the puzzle to help turn down the heat in the brain, because that's going to cause you nothing but problems. Also, there's a meta-analysis which looks at many studies to find common characteristics, and it's about vitamin D and lowering the bad LDL triglycerides, cholesterol. This was done at the University of Tennessee. So they published this in Nutrition Reviews, and they found a greater likeliness improving your lipid profiles, meaning you're going to have better fats in the body if you have vitamin D3. It's that simple. So this was done at both the University of Tennessee and the University of Kentucky. So make sure you're getting your vitamin D3. This was a randomized trial. Also, higher consumption of soft drinks. This is a separate study than the one I did the other day, is showing an increased risk of death. This is from Catalan Institute of Oncology in Spain. Once again, another study showing us that the more of those soft drinks, those sugar sweetened, and that means your high fructose corn syrup, those drinks you consume, the greater the risk of death. And they looked at 16 years of people drinking soft drinks, and that's what they found. So whatever you do, there's right now hundreds of natural, non-toxic soft drinks in health food stores. You can even make your own. You know, you can brew hibiscus tea, which is very aromatic and very tasty. You can add in some cinnamon. You can add in, to really give it a more exotic, cardamom. I like using cardamom in, after I brew some tea, I'll use cardamom and anise and then stevia and then put it in the fridge. It's a great iced tea and it quenches your thirst. If you really want to quench your thirst, always add lemon. So, but don't drink the soft drinks. From Brigham and Women's Hospital, pomegranate, the juice, it can protect an infant's brain. So when it comes to protecting the newborn brain, taking steps to mitigate risk before birth is critical. And some newborns, such as those with what is called an IUGR, that's a form of a growth restriction or a heightened risk. So being able to intervene before birth to aid protecting the newborn brain can help prevent the often devastating effects of brain injury. In ongoing investigations, clinical researchers at Brigham and Women's Hospital are looking at pomegranate juice intake by the mother during pregnancy to have protective effect. Now, the paper was just published in PLOS One, and they presented their preliminary findings from a clinical trial of expectant mothers using babies who were diagnosed with IUGR, and this was supported by the National Institutes of Health, and that's important. So it shows pregnant women should be consuming pomegranate juice every day. All right, it's that simple. You heard me make a mention the other day that vaping is harmful. It's very harmful. I gave you a list of 15 items that it does in the body that's bad. Now there's one more. The e-cigarettes using this vaping and the different flavors. People during pregnancy using them, it impairs the metabolic health in daughters in this particular laboratory study, this University of North Carolina. So e-cigarette usage can impair fertility and pregnancy outcomes. Not good. This was published in the Journal of Endocrine Society. Now, I know that many young and pregnant women are using e-cigarettes as a safer alternative to smoking, but little is known about the effects of fertility and pregnancy outcomes. And e-cigarettes are driving increases in tobacco product use among youth. So there's a lot of people using them, about 3.6 million younger people using them. But they're dangerous, and they shouldn't be used at all, and especially if you're pregnant, because they could contribute to problems in the metabolism of the female. Good news from the Hazong University of Science in China, the healthiest lifestyle, that's the lifestyle many of you are using every day, is linked to a 75% reduction in diabetes risk, and as a bonus, a reduced risk of cardiovascular disease and death in those already who are diabetic. So good news for diabetics and good news for pre-diabetics, about 100 million Americans. So people who have the healthiest lifestyle, that starts, of course, with a healthy, organic, plant-based diet and then proper supplementation and exercise and stress management, you're going to live a longer life. This was published in the European Association for the Study of Diabetes. All right, and the average diabetic, well, I'll give you an example. And this is very common. A woman comes, in fact, I don't know, Jesse runs Progressive Radio Network here. Would you look for the testimonial from the woman from, I believe she's from Tennessee, who was morbidly obese, had diabetes that was off the chart, couldn't control it even with four medications, came to a retreat, In 1 week, she went with multiple medications and still couldn't get her fasting blood sugar in the morning below 180 in 1 week. And thereafter, it stayed at 80. 80, that's normal. And if we can find that piece, I want you to hear her. Because in my world, helping a person with diabetes to normalize their blood sugar, and as a result, helping them to prevent heart attacks and strokes, where we are at a higher risk of a heart attack and stroke and depression and cancers if you're diabetic. And yet, Orthodox medicine, they try the best they can, they're diligent, they're sincere, and they fail all the time. Yet you talk with any of the thousands of individuals who are on a healthier lifestyle, not just mine, and you'll see that it's not uncommon to bring that blood sugar down. But you got to do it all. All the pieces have to be there. And on the last day, she was there 2 weeks, on the last day of her stay, when I asked people in the morning, who'd like to go for a walk? That's all I said. Of the 40 guests, we like to limit it to a maximum of 40 so everybody gets personal attention. They were sitting around having their breakfast, and seven people raised their hands. Now, mind you, none of these people are healthy. They're all either terminally ill, and I don't know any of this because I don't ask a single person. I'm not there to diagnose or treat any disease. But it just so happens all those people had impossibly difficult medical conditions that are just not going to be cured. And they'd all seen, and we're seeing Orthodox doctors, oncologists, and pulmonologists, and they all went out for a walk. And every single one of them, including an advanced multiple sclerosis woman who couldn't walk when she got there 50 feet without losing her balance, walked 26 miles. One guy walked 30 miles. She walked 26 miles. And all of those other conditions, she had elevated blood pressure, came back to normal, and she's been able to sustain that ever since. So a healthy lifestyle you can sustain. Unfortunately, people sustain unhealthy lifestyles until it overwhelms them. So that's that. We're going to take a brief break. And by the way, our fundraiser for our sister station, WBAI, in the next week, I'm going to be matching the funds they put in for the book. So all of you who ordered the book, which was their number one hit in the last drive, but there are no books, so it literally has to be printed from scratch. They managed to come up with $12,500. I'm going to match that $12,500 so that you're all going to get your books. It might take about 8 weeks because it's got to be printed, but at least you're going to get them. That I can assure you. The other premiums that the station, unfortunately, was not able to pay for, we're doing a retreat the last 2 weeks of October in order to raise funds to buy the premiums and get them immediately to you. So we're going to get through this. We're helping the station. We're doing all we can. And so just please be patient. And in time, and hopefully it won't be that long a time, you'll all get your premiums. And then I'm working with the station, I'm working with the management, so they create a different way. My goal is when you call in and pledge, they immediately take that money, if it's for a pledge, and they put that into an exclusive pledge account. It can't be used for anything else. And that way, the premium is immediately purchased, whether it's a publisher and a book or a DVD or CD, whatever it is. And that way, it's paid for. Now, mind you, when you realize how much profit the station makes off a premium, the publishers, everybody who gets it, they don't make a nickel. And it's generally 10 to 1, meaning if a premium you're paying $100 for, it costs the station $10. So they have money to pay for the premium and still have money to go into their general operating fund and pay off their debts. So that's what I'm going to advocate on your behalf so that everyone gets their premium in a timely manner. You know, everyone's working at it. Everyone's trying to save the station. That's our goal. We're going to take a break. Before we do, I'm just going to let you know about two things coming up. First, I was just told by our our top editor here in post-production, who's been, my goodness, Valerie has been working on documentaries here for over 30 years. And we're on our most important documentary we've ever done. We're only weeks away from it being ready. But she says, Gary, could you mention on the air, we'll hire someone to work with her for 3 weeks, not doing any editing, but rather there's lots of details of contacting people and getting credits and for photographs and B-roll, et cetera. Just detail work, easy to do, but you'll be paid. Let me give you Valerie's number. You can call her directly. It's 3 weeks worth of work. Unless you're really good, then she might hire you to do other work. 646-926-5441. Again, this is for 3 weeks paid work, helping to get our documentary out because she can't do all that editing she does and at the same time get all the details surrounding that done. So call her at 646-926-5441. Also, coming up this Saturday, there's a conference, and boy, you talk about credible. All these scientists and people are credible. A fire commissioner is going to be there. Over 200 firefighters have testified to the 9/11 grand jury investigation. Now, this is not the government's investigation. These are lawyers who are working to show the truth, and that is that they all heard bombs going off prior to the plane hitting the World Trade Center, and some gripping testimony. But also there's some brand new information in from the University of Alaska, where they just spent 4 years doing the most detailed, comprehensive analysis of Building 7 collapse in their history. All that information will be shared for the first time. And my lecture, which is at 5:30, it starts at 3, goes to 7, and there are about 9 presenters. I'll be there I have a lecture earlier today, so I got to go from one lecture, which don't ask about it, it's packed, sold out, down to there. So it's at 80th Street and Lexington Avenue, 80th and Lex. It's a church, and I'll be giving brand new information as well. Now the following Saturday, there'll be the Harlem Vaccine Forum. Some outstanding speakers will be there. Shelley Ely, Mary Holland. I'll be there at noon, and it's up at the National Action Network at 106 West 145th Street. 106 West 145th Street starts at noon. It's free admission. So those are the two things coming up, two Saturdays in a row. I'm going to take a break and come right back at you. Nice to have you with us, everyone. I'm Gary Knoll. We're going to go to Abby Martin right after this commentary. I might mention that we thought Jesse said, why don't we just invite her on to give her story? So we're going to reach out to her today, and hopefully she'll be available and on tomorrow. How does freedom die? Well, when you no longer can tell the truth without being silenced, censored, in some way, your character and reputation attacked. Are you given a forum, an open forum? If they want to attack you, bring on your attack, bring your evidence, but at least give me the opportunity to share my truth. I have documented truth. Chris Hedges has documented truth. Abby Martin has documented truth. The people at Black Agenda Report have their truth. There are hundreds of us in our society who on a daily basis, our commitment is first and foremost to finding the truth and then sharing it with the public. But what if all the forums the official forms are closed to any truth unless it's official truth. So if we believe that a vaccine should be tested with a placebo experiment, meaning you give one group saline solutions, you give another group the vaccines, and then you test them every 6 months for 3 years, that's a legitimate study. And if it turns out that the children who received the vaccines are healthier and illnesses prevented with no side effects, then I would support those vaccines. But they've never done that. In fact, they're all of the randomized studies, the placebos have been other vaccines. Then it's not a legitimate trial. Now, what if you want to explain that to people before they're vaccinating themselves or their children? You can't find a forum. The New York Times, The Washington Post, CNN, MSNBC, Democracy Now, and Amy Goodman, you're not going to get that information. No. If you want to talk about something official that supports the CDC, the U.S. government, the National Security Agency, the CIA, you'll have a forum. That's how freedom dies. When you have the truth on global warming, but no forum wants to hear it, that's when freedom dies. When you believe that your body is yours and there should be a sanctity rule where only you has the ultimate decision what should be done with your body and what should go into it, that's where freedom dies. When they say, no, your body's not your own, it's ours. We'll do with it what we will. You see, freedom dies in these ways, and yet the average person's unaware of it. We have ended up in a place that I can only arguably call a police state, but the average person will not recognize it unless they themselves have personally been abused. We end up brainwashing the entire population so they believe they're free. Gary, I'm free. I can go to any Broadway show. I can watch any television show. I can go out and eat any food I want, healthier garbage. Yes, you can. But you're still in a prison. Your life is surrounded by walls. Face the facts. We are no longer free in the real sense. We are in an American police state. Now, you will enjoy the illusion of freedom, but that's all it is. An elaborate deception rooted in denial and delusion that hides the grasping, greedy, power-hungry, megalomaniacal force that lurks beneath the surface. Brick by brick, the prison walls being erected around us by the constant security state, the idea that if you say something that challenges corporate America or its agenda or the government or its agenda, if you challenge gas hydrofracking, if you challenge the pollution by industries into rivers and streams and into the ocean, you're now considered no better than a domestic terrorist. And that's because our government and its corporate partners in crime grow more oppressive and more persuasive by the day, brick by brick. We're finding there is nowhere to run. Brick by brick, we are being walled in, locked down, and locked up. There's no open forum for us to share our ideas, our truths, our proof. That's the curious thing about walls. They not only keep those on the outside from getting in, they also keep those on the inside from getting out. Consider, if you will, all the different freedoms that have been removed from us. For example, if you don't want your child to be given toxic, provable toxic vaccines like Gardasil, and all the science shows it's toxic, we have thousands upon thousands of kids that have ended up in hospitals because of how toxic it is. Well then, it's not your child's call. They'll be refused public education, and you will be considered an unfit parent, and you could have that child taken away and put in protective custody. That's what it means. You see, we live in an authoritarian prison in every sense of the word. Granted, this prison may not appear to be overly bleak as the soul-destroying gulags described by Alexander Solzhenitsyn in his masterpiece, The Gulag Archipelago. But that's just a matter of aesthetics. Strip away the surface embellishments, and you'll find the core is no less sinister than that of the gulags of the Cold War era Soviet Union. If you thought that those cages, those young people were put into, the inhumane conditions at our borders, which they are, and if you think those are bad, then you should do a little check of history about the Cold War era Soviet Union. Those gulags, according to historian Anna Applebaum, used as a form of administrative exile, which required no trial. And by the way, show me what's the difference between today's no trial and Wikipedia. No trial, no sentencing procedure, no opportunity for habeas corpus, no opportunity to present evidence. You are simply taken by a group of anonymous people, and you are condemned and put into permanent gulag conditions. No matter what truth, you cannot change anything. That is happening right now to hundreds of people and hundreds of thousands of therapists practicing alternative medicine, and the hundreds of millions of people who benefited from it, and the hundreds of thousands of scientific studies on PubMed supporting the efficacy and safety of those very therapies. Yet a small little contingent of individuals working on some warped notion of ideological truth are deciding if they don't like you because you're a chiropractor, you're an honest journalist, or if you are against GMOs, or if you're against vaccines, then you deserve to be publicly flogged with no opportunity. You are gagged. Since when would we allow this in our society? And yet it is pervasive in our society. Anything that they choose to do to troublemakers or political opponents, they can. And by the way, the word gulag, G-U-L-A-G, refers to a labor concentration camp where prisoners, oftentimes political prisoners, were considered enemies of the state. Rare or imagined, were imprisoned as punishment for their crimes against the state. And over the time, the gulag has also come to signify not only the administration of the concentration camps, but also the system of Soviet slave labor itself. Well, how's that different than prison labor, where you're making a dollar a day? Or how about all the firefighters fighting all the fires throughout the United States? Those are prison labor. Are they paid what any other firefighter would be paid? No, they're still paid slave labor. And it's right in front of us. How many of the clothes that you have in your closet were made by prison labor, slave labor? How many of the computers over 100 major corporations use state slave labor, prisoners, knowing that they can't complain, they can't strike, and they don't have to be paid but diddly squat? So in all forms and varieties, labor camps, punishment camps, criminal and political camps, women's camps, children's camps, transient camps, even more broadly, gulag has come to mean the Soviet repressive system itself, the set of procedures that prisoners once called the meat grinder, the arrests, the interrogations, the transport in unheated cattle cars, the forced labor, the destruction of families, the years spent in exile, the early and unnecessary deaths. How does that differ from Guantanamo? How does that differ from black ops sites? How does that differ from the CIA and how they've dealt with truth sayers? Now think for a moment. Wrap your mind around this. The people who are the whistleblowers, the William Bennies and the Snowdens and the others, Chelsea Manning, these people told the truth, and it was shown that everything they shared was the truth. They showed official corruption. They are the ones being punished, condemned, or imprisoned, or exiled, and the very people that they exposed were never punished. What does that say about us as a society? Alexander Solzhenitsyn was such a political prisoner. For the crime, what did he do? He dared to criticize Stalin in a private letter to a school friend. He was arrested and sentenced to 8 years in exile in a labor camp under the harshest of conditions. That was before psychiatry paved the way for totalitarian regimes such as the Soviet Union to declare dissidents mentally ill and consigned to political prisoners to prisons disguised as psychiatric hospitals. Now, is there anything like that in the United States? Yes. Every child diagnosed with ADD and ADHD, a primarily fictional condition because children are children, but they pathologize being a child. So if you're too rambunctious, if you're distracted, if you're bored, you suddenly have ADD and give Johnny Ritalin, a psychoactive drug. Would we have had ADD and ADHD as diagnosis if we didn't have drugs to sell? No. And that's how it works. If you're too interested in your health, now that's a psychiatric disorder. If you're willing to get up in someone's face and tell them to back off, that's authority defiance disorder. If you don't like how your parents are teaching you, talking to you, and working with you, that's parental defiance disorder. These are actual psychiatric disorders, meaning brain chemical imbalances, for which you can be prescribed psychiatric medication. Yet no one pays attention to how many kids are being drugged, 8 to 10 million every morning before they go to school. These are the new form of the Soviet Union's psychiatric re-education prisons. Yes, we are an overly medicated society. That's taking away your freedoms with artificial diseases. The idea is discredited and subject to electric shocks and drugs and various medical procedures to break people down physically and mentally. In addition to declaring political dissidents mentally unsound, governments in the Cold War also made use of an administrative process for dealing with individuals who were considered a bad influence on others or troublemakers. Wasn't the author George Kennan who described the process in which the obnoxious person may not be guilty of any crime, but if in the opinion of the local authorities his presence in a particular place is prejudicial to public order or incompatible with public tranquility, he may be arrested without warrant, may be held for up to 2 years in prison, and may then be removed by force to any other place within the limits of the empire, and there be put under police surveillance for a period of from 1 to 10 years. Today, warrantless searches, warrantless seizures. Our police, in the last 10 years, have stolen more money from citizens, cars, homes, businesses under asset forfeiture than all organized crime in the United States. And yet it's legal. Surveillance, illegal surveillance, is now legal surveillance. Indefinite detention is allowed because of Barack Obama, the National Defense Authorization Act. Isolation, exile, even killing a person if they deem that person is in some way a threat to the state. The age-old practice by which despotic regimes eliminate their critics or potential adversaries by making them disappear or forcing them to flee into exile, them being able to support nothing on their side because the media is driving the face of totalitarianism. Look, we all saw what happened to Julian Assange, with Edward Snowden, with Bradley Manning. They, too, were exiled for daring to challenge, Chelsea Manning, I should say, challenge the powers that be. It happened to a 26-year-old decorated Marine, Brandon Robb, who was targeted because of his Facebook page, interrogated by government agents about his views on government corruption, arrested with no warning, labeled mentally ill for subscribing to so-called conspiratorial views about the government, detained against his will in a psych ward for standing by his views, and isolated from his family and friends and attorneys. Robb's case exposed the seedy underbelly of a government system that is targeting Americans, especially military veterans, for expressing their discontent over America's rapid transition to a police state. Now, through the use of new rules, they have what is called behavioral threat assessments and pre-crime policing prevention programs. The government is laying the groundwork that would allow it to weaponize the label of mental illness as a means of exiling those whistleblowers, dissidents, and freedom fighters, and honest journalists who refuse to march in lockstep with its dictates. That the government is using the charge of mental illness as a means by which to immobilize and disarm its critics is diabolically brilliant. With one stroke of a magistrate's pen, these individuals are declared mentally ill, locked away against their will, and stripped of their constitutional rights. These developments are merely the realization of various U.S. government initiatives dating back to 2009, including one dubbed Operation Vigilant Eagle, which calls for surveillance of every single military veteran returning from Iraq and Afghanistan. Why? Because they came to believe, the Defense Department, the CIA, the National Security Agency, that if you fought in those theaters, you're going to be an extremist. You're going to be a potential domestic terrorist because you're disgruntled or disillusioned or suffering from the psychological effects of war. So coupled with the report on what has happened with some right-wing extremists in this country, now every one of those poor souls, men and women coming back, who are suffering from post-traumatic stress disorder, who can't find a place back in their family or in society, who can't be hired. I've done 3 award-winning documentaries on this. You can watch them. I found 16,000 homeless vets living near Titusville in Florida, without water, without toilets, without any help whatsoever. I went in and I filmed and I told their story. You mean all those people you're going to consider domestic terrorists? Yes. And you're going to monitor them? Yes. But you're not going to help them. You're not going to take them off the drugs that are causing them to put a gun in their mouth 22 times a day. Veterans are killing themselves. That you're not concerned with. That you're not concerned with. You're setting their brain on fire with the drugs you're giving them, the antipsychotic medications that cause delusion and suicidal tendencies by giving to them. That you're not going to help them deprogram from what you conditioned to experience and participate in. That's not your responsibility in your mind, and giving them up to 3-year wait if they need help as a veteran. But making sure that you have some private corporations monitoring every single thing they do so you can get a government psychiatrist and law enforcement officials to make sure that these veterans are not just ticking time bombs. Yeah, that's what happens when we begin to lose our freedom. When anyone who disagrees with the National Security Agency is now labeled, like Russ Tice, as a domestic terrorist. Who's Russ Tice? T-I-C-E? He was willing to testify to Congress about the National Security Agency's warrantless wiretapping program. He was deemed, quote, mentally unbalanced based upon 2 psychiatric evaluations ordered by his superiors. Are those the same psychiatric evaluations that were done and all the people were waterboarded and extreme interrogation that was considered okay? In 2009, New York City police officer Adrian Schoolcraft had his home raided and he was handcuffed to a gurney and taken into emergency custody for an alleged psychiatric episode. It was later discovered by way of an internal investigation that his superiors were retaliating against him for reporting police misconduct. So the good cop becomes the cop that the other cops can completely destroy. And you wonder why we don't trust the police en masse or the military or the government or anyone else? There's a good reason for it. And by the way, Schoolcraft spent 6 days in the mental facility and as a further indignity was presented with a bill for $7,185 upon his release. And I have a lot more cases I could share, but that's enough for today. We're going to go to our guest right now. Standing by, Abby Martin. Now, many of you know Abby because she was on RTV and Breaking the Set and other programs, but she's here for a different reason. She's here because last night I watched in its entirety a documentary that she was responsible for producing, and I'm also narrating. And nice to have you with us today, Abby.
Thank you so much for having me on, Gary.
Abby, would you begin, please, by telling us about the documentary and what this documentary meant to you to do it, because you had to go to great sacrifice to do this, and especially knowing that the likelihood of anyone showing this documentary would be almost zero. So we want to make sure people have a chance to see it. So I want you to tell us about the documentary, the story that it's laying out, and why no one in the mainstream media is going to do the work that you did on this important feature. The forum is yours.
Exactly, Gary. The story starts about a year and a half ago, March 30th, the Great March of Return in Gaza. People who understand a little bit about the situation understands that Israel, you know, is in a rogue apartheid state, implementing not only martial law in the West Bank, annexing the West Bank slowly, but also besieging an area that is called an open-air prison. 2.2 million people live in Gaza. 75% of them are refugees, ethnically cleansed from their own land, which they can see over a fence partitioning them from their own villages that they were expelled from mere decades ago. The situation in Gaza is extremely dire. Every aspect of Gaza is controlled by the Israeli military. You cannot leave. You cannot leave even if you are sick and dying. The rate of medical travel permits permitted has dropped drastically over the last couple years, where now less than half of people who are near death are permitted to leave to get medical help. Now, this, you know, all of these things together have caused the need for the Great March of Return on the heels of Trump's allegiance with Netanyahu, this kind of right-wing fascistic collaboration, where it's exposing Israel's true character, true nature. It's getting harder and harder for progressives to actually apologize for what Israel is doing, especially with Trump's friendship with Netanyahu and Kushner's profiting off the illegal occupation and illegal settlement process. So with the moving of the embassy to Jerusalem was a stake in the heart for a lot of Palestinians who consider Jerusalem a sacred place. It's one of the holiest sites in Islam. The vast majority of Palestinians are not able to go to Jerusalem. So this moving of the embassy, symbolic as it is, was an extremely big catalyst for Palestinians. So within Gaza, in a place that unemployment is 54%, 97% of the water is actually toxic, and this is due to the bombing, relentless bombing of water desalination plants, and of course preventing the ability to rebuild after these bombing campaigns that happen every couple months. They wanted to show the world that they are peaceful. They wanted to show the world a mass action, a mass civil disobedience action, essentially symbolically, to kind of reclaim the fact that they are still refugees. I said 75% are refugees. That's a really pertinent number because they have never had a home, Gary. For the last 70 years since the mass expulsion of 1948 and the Nakba, where 500 villages were razed to the ground, the vast majority were deported to Gaza. There was actually, you know, laws put in place to shoot infiltrators dead who tried to return, to put mines on the routes of return, to blow up these villages and expel them to Gaza. And that's still a punishment today that you see for a lot of Palestinians. Oh, deport them to Gaza, expel them to Gaza, that's their punishment. They'll die there. So, needless to say, it's an extremely drastic humanitarian crisis, manufactured at that. We're talking about an area that, you know, is next to an area that people are living where if you get breast cancer, you have an 86% chance of surviving it in Israel. If you get breast cancer in Gaza, your survival rate plummets to 30%. So all of these things, you know, coalesced together really provided the need for Palestinians to act and act quickly. The Great March of Return started with one Palestinian poet, 34-year-old Abu Ahmed Artema, who was just walking around the perimeter of Gaza. We're talking about a 5-mile-long, 25-mile-wide area, very small. And he just saw birds flying between the occupied territory freely. And he just thought, why is it that birds can fly freely from the lands that we are from, where our ancestors were born, where our blood originates from? Why is that? And why are we trapped? Why are we trapped in this open-air prison? Why can we not leave? And so he just innocuously posted this post on Facebook, but he said, what would happen? What would happen if we all peacefully crossed this border, peacefully crossed this artificial border separating us from our land? What would happen if we erected tents and if we tried to reclaim our status of refugees and tried to tell the international community that we're still here, that we never had the right to return implemented? What would happen? And what did happen is profound change. shocking, harrowing, horrifying, Gary. Tens of thousands of Palestinians heeded that call. They went out there, they marched, many led by women. Contingents of artists, poets, activists, multitude of political factions in Gaza. It's not a monolithic, you know, dictatorship by Hamas. That's absurdly cartoonish and not true. So we're talking about tens of thousands of Palestinians who went out there with bared chests, some armed with rocks. That's a symbolic action in a David versus Goliath battle. What happened? They were sniped dead by the dozens, by the hundreds. Press, medics, journalists, disabled people, and children. So even if this was an armed battle, even if this was a military battle waging war against Israel, the crimes that have been committed over the Great March of Return over the last year and a half would still be considered egregious violations of international law. Stark violations of the Geneva Conventions, targeting of protected categories on purpose from snipers. But that's not what this was. This was a multitude of peaceful civilians, unarmed, bared chests, have been going out there every Friday for the last year and a half and getting mowed down every single Friday, using exploding bullets, another violation of international law, using an unidentified lethal gas that suffocates you and kills you, another violation of international law. When this started happening, and on May 14th, when 60 unarmed protesters were gunned down in cold blood by Israeli snipers, and the media didn't cover it any differently, and they used the passive voice, Palestinians died, clashes happened. The front page of the New York Times, the day after this egregious massacre, said, Israelis reflect. I hope that every bullet was justified. Fast forward to June 1st. The death of Razan al-Najjar, a beautiful feminist Palestinian medic, volunteer, who risked her life every day out there helping aid the wounded, gunned down in cold blood. When that happened, and Israeli forces released a doctored video claiming that she was a human shield and died for Hamas, I was sick. I was absolutely devastated. I was shocked that the media could still lie, still cover for this slick propaganda campaign, this Hasbara operation, and not tell the truth, as naked and blatant as it is to all of us who understand the situation. So a group of journalists in Gaza and I got together. First, they Skyped me into a meeting to simply ask, why is the media not covering this? What is the media saying? Please tell us, you know, what the Western press is doing in response to Israel's war crimes. And I was the bearer of bad news to tell them, unfortunately, the media is not covering it any differently. They're doing the same exact thing that they did during the Gaza flotilla massacre, that they did during the bombing of the Baker boys on the beach, blaming you for your own misery and death, accusing you of self-genocide, accusing you of stacking up dead bodies because it's telegenically attractive. That's how sick this has become, Gary. So I worked with them. I mean, I was banned from going to Gaza. I would have gone myself. Unfortunately, my partner, Mike Preisner, and I, when we were in the West Bank in 2017, navigating the dehumanizing checkpoints and military occupation, we were denied entry to Gaza. We were denied entry on the basis that we were propagandists, that we were Iranian agents. So I had no choice but to accept that and, you know, take the opportunity to work with these journalists in Gaza. And I wanted to give a shout-out to the beautiful videography and cinematography from Asma Atiyah Hamad and Muaz Maza, who risked their lives several times, saw children getting killed, disabled people getting shot, near-death experiences every single week, getting the footage that they did for this film. When I saw the footage come back to me after we directed the interviews and story, we were absolutely blown away. Anyone who sees the quality of this film, it is akin to a Hollywood production. If anyone's seen Samsara or you know, that kind of movie, I mean, it really feels that same way. It is absolutely astonishing and breathtaking footage. slow motion, steady cam. So we saw this and we knew we couldn't just do an Empire Files episode. We had to do a full-length, feature-length film to do this story justice, to do the footage justice.
Abby, how can people watch the film?
Right now, it is behind a small paywall on Vimeo. You can go to GazaFightsFreedom.com. We spent over, you know, $100,000 on this film. And like you said, Gary, it is all based on small donations. So you cannot get this story out on corporate media. You cannot get this story out and get people to back this story. It is extremely controversial, and well, it's very, very censored.
Here's what we're going to do, Abby. We are the number one progressive radio forum in the world. We have a large audience worldwide. Mm-hmm. If you would like to come on Tuesday's Progressive Commentary Hour for the full hour or even longer, and maybe we could show a few five-minute clips throughout it, then we will take your message worldwide and get more people interested in seeing it and supporting a notion that the truth must come out. And this is how you get the truth out, because we have a lot of people who are activists out there who follow that Progressive Commentary Hour. So I'm happy to have you on for 1 to 2 hours on Tuesday evening.
Let's do it.
All right.
Great.
This Tuesday coming, Abby Martin will present the film Gaza Fights for Freedom. We will get Abby to edit maybe 3 or 4 5-minute segments. She'll tell the backstory to this, because there's some. I just got a report today about how 1,000 individuals in Gaza from that demonstration, the Great March of Return, were hit with these bullets, and it really emphasized these bullets are illegal. These are crimes against humanity, and how it goes into the skin and shatters all the bones. These people now have infections, but not the medicines, and they're losing their legs, and they're losing their lives because no medicine's allowed in there for them on this. So we want to show you the total truth of this in the full feature film, which she mentioned can be viewed on Vimeo, V-I-M-E-O. And it's the Empire File episodes that you can go to empirefiles.tv and YouTube. And Abby Martin's personal website is abbymartin.org. Abby, we will look forward to a 1 to 2 hour discussion in depth on this. And also, maybe you could see about that one interview you did with the former Israeli soldier who came on and told the truth in a separate episode of Empire Files. I watched that. I found that very compelling. And also, we can talk about the pro-peace movement from the Israelis. There is a peace movement in there, but we never hear about it in the United States. Okay?
Absolutely, Gary. Thank you so much, and thank you so much for your work. Looking forward to it.
Abby Martin, a full 1 to 2 hours on Tuesday, Progressive Commentary Hour, 7 to 8 o'clock at night. I'm Gary Knoll. Thank you all for watching, and have a nice day.